This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
No one will be allowed to enter the zone. Not the media, not the families, not the officials who want to come and inspect from whatever. Only those who are assigned are going to be allowed to be in there.
That's South Africa's Minister of Health on the strict quarantine measures that will be used on South Africans being evacuated from Wuhan, China, the epicenter of the coronavirus outbreak. Details coming up also. Armed men killed at least 50 people in attacks on villages in the Nigerian state of Kaduna, and Eritrea's crackdown on fundamental freedoms and religious practice, as well as its harsh military service, is being condemned by a UN investigator. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, South Africa plans for the army to evacuate its citizens from the Chinese city of Wuhan, has raised questions on the country's preparedness to deal with an outbreak if they bring the coronavirus home. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
According to the government's announcement yesterday, 151 South Africans who are trapped in Wuhan will be evacuated within 14 days. The announcement has raised a national debate on whether the government is up to the task in case one or more of those people test positive on arrival. But the Minister of Health, Zweli Mkhize, says the government is taking no chances and will ensure all of the evacuees are certified coronavirus-free before boarding the plane home.
All nationals that do not meet the medical screening requirements during the pre-screening phase will be referred to the Chinese health system.
Amongst other measures, Mkhize says all the evacuees will be quarantined on arrival under strict conditions for 21 days.
No one will be allowed to enter the zone. Not the media, not the families, not the officials who want to come and inspect from whatever. Only those who are assigned are going to be allowed to be in there.
Medical experts have expressed confidence in South Africa's evacuation plan and are calling for calm. Dr. Angelique Kutsie is with the South African Medical Association.
I think that so far the precautionary measurements that's been put in place by the Department of Health is the correct ones to have. They are following the World Health Organization guidelines. Instead of the 14 days of quarantine, they go for 21 days of quarantine.
The National Institute of Communicable Diseases has emphasized the need to intensify public awareness so that citizens know the symptoms of the virus and how to avoid catching it. Sibongile Walaza is the senior epidemiologist at the National Institute of Communicable Diseases in South Africa.
Making people aware where to get the correct information, because again, there's some lot of information going out there, but just to know the correct platforms where to go where they're looking for information. I think that we've provided, but again, it's something that needs to continue.
South Africa has not recorded any case of COVID-19. However, two South African citizens working on a Japanese cruise ship contracted the virus, and the government says they will remain in Japan until they are successfully treated. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Armed men killed at least 50 people yesterday in attacks on villages in the Nigerian state of Kaduna. Police say about 100 armed men attacked six villages in the Igabi district, shooting residents and looting and burning homes. Zaid Ibrahim, a member of Nigeria's parliament, said assailants began shooting people at random as worshippers left mosques after prayer. Ibrahim and local councillor Dayabu Karawa told the French news agency AFP that killings were the work of bandits. Karawa said they accused residents of providing information about their hiding places to soldiers. Karawa told VOA's Hausa service that the shooters were part of an Islamist insurgent group Boko Haram, saying they spared nobody, even Islamic students. Karawa appealed for President Muhammadu Buhari to send security forces to protect the area. In a new report, a UN investigator is condemning an Eritrean crackdown on fundamental freedoms and religious practice, as well as the country's harsh indefinite military service and widespread abuse. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Hopes that Eritrea, which has been accused of human rights abuses, would institute reforms after it signed a historic peace agreement with Ethiopia in 2018 have not materialized. If anything, a UN report on its human rights situation has found widespread human rights violations, including arbitrary arrest, enforced disappearances, sexual violence, and torture. Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights in Eritrea, Daniela Kravitz, deplores the government's repression of religious freedom. She says Christians practicing without government approval are arrested, as are those who belong to non-recognized Christian congregations. She says Muslims also are targeted, arrested, and jailed. She finds no justification for Eritrea's failure to reform its compulsory national service. She says that failure cannot be justified on the grounds that economic conditions in the country do not permit job creation or salary hikes for conscripts.
There are, however, immediate measures that the authorities could take that do not depend on economic reforms, such as stopping the ongoing roundups of youth for forced conscription, separating secondary education from military conscription, and putting in place mechanisms to monitor and prevent abuses against conscripts, in particular against female conscripts.
Kravitz is calling for the release of all political prisoners and prisoners of conscience. She says people are arbitrarily arrested because of their opposition to the government or their beliefs as conscientious objectors. She says they often are jailed for decades without any recourse to justice or relief. Eritrean ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Tesfame Kel-Geratu, calls the report politically motivated and ill-intentioned. He says it portrays his country in a negative light and does not reflect any of its positive achievements. He notes Eritrea is at peace after two decades of conflict. He says Eritrea is in the process of resolving the many social and economic problems that have arisen during that time, but adds, there is no quick fix. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In Guinea, the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, FNDC, says it will renew nationwide protests Thursday against any attempt by President Alpha Conde to have a referendum on constitutional changes. This comes after Conde announced Saturday that he was postponing the vote that was scheduled to take place yesterday. FNDC member Faya Milamona says Conde bowed to domestic and international pressure. Initially, Conde said the referendum was designed to update the constitution. However, critics claim it was part of an effort by the president to pursue another term in office. Ethiopians in Washington have called on the U.S. to stop pressuring Ethiopia on the Ethiopian Grand Renaissance Dam negotiations. Haptah Musiyum covered the protests, and Salem Salomon has the story.
President Trump,
stop pressuring Ethiopia.
Stop pressuring
Ethiopia.
U.S.
Ethiopians in Washington, D.C. gathered to support the country's Nile Dam project and voice displeasure over the U.S. role in the negotiations. Dozens of demonstrators rallied in front of the U.S. State Department on Thursday, carrying Ethiopian and American flags and signs with slogans including, America should mediate and not coerce. Many protesters expressed anger at the perceived favoritism of U.S. mediators toward Egypt in a dispute over water usage from the Nile. The U.S. Department of Treasury is playing a lead role in mediating technical discussions between Ethiopia, Egypt, and Sudan over the construction of the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, one of the largest infrastructural projects in African history. Protesters believe the Department of Treasury, along with mediators from the World Bank, are biased toward Egypt. This week, Ethiopian negotiators temporarily walked away from discussions, according to state-owned media.
This dam is being built with the Ethiopian people's expense, and America is siding with Egypt. We don't think this is right. Ethiopia should have the right to use its own water, and that is its international right. We also want to remind the people and government of America that they can't meddle by taking sides and disregard the right of Ethiopia to use its own water.
That was protest participant Dawit Kalasu Alambo speaking to VOA's Amharic service. Egypt, which relies on the Nile for 90% of its fresh water, has asked for safeguards to slow the filling of the dam and avoid affecting the Nile water level. Ethiopia has said it plans to begin filling the 145-meter-tall dam later this year. Planners say it will take 4 to 7 years to fill. Once complete, the dam is expected to be the largest hydropower project on the continent, producing 6,000 megawatts of electricity and exporting power in neighboring countries. It is a source of pride to many Ethiopians who do not want the country to make concessions.
Ethiopia, manum maidaradaro ya abay balebitna.
Muhayyidin Suraj Muhammad of Alexandria, Virginia, also attended the protest.
Ethiopia is the uncontested owner of the Nile. Our water is ours. We have every right to do whatever we want. There is some pressure at the moment, and there are some activities preventing work. And we are here to let those who are part of that realize and stress that this is our right.
Some say Ethiopia temporarily walking away from negotiations is a major blow to the process. Negotiators had hoped to have a technical agreement between the three countries by the end of this month, a deadline that now appears unattainable.
Now we have to wait and see what the next schedule is. I think Ethiopian government spokesmen have termed this as a postponement. So not suggesting that the meeting has been cancelled forever, but only that they need more time to prepare for it.
William Davison, International Crisis Group Senior Analyst for Ethiopia, said Ethiopians feel that the World Bank rules give downstream countries too much power to veto upstream projects. The country also worries that the U.S. military ties with Egypt make it favorably disposed to Egyptian arguments in the dispute.
So Ethiopia feels that the international community is in some way set up to rule against it or come down on the other party's side in terms of this general issue. And that's why they have been reticent about having third-party involvement. The US and the World Bank were supposed to be observers, but there seems to have been some form of mission creep with those third parties now actually drafting agreements. And as we discussed, these are an agreement that is not to Ethiopia's liking. They feel that it places too many obligations upon them.
With Habtamu Siyum, Salem Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. The tangled political mess in Guinea-Bissau, one of the world's poorest countries, has gotten even muddier. The African Party for the Independence of Guinea-Bissau and Cabo Verde, PAIGC, urged the international community to intervene and help Guinea-Bissau, which it said is experiencing a military coup. It all started when lawmakers rejected the swearing-in a day earlier of Umaro Sisoko Embalo, the winner of a December 29th presidential runoff election in the West African nation. Outgoing President José Mário Vaz had handed over power to Embalo last week. However, PAIGC claims that Imbalo's victory was marred by fraud and its losing candidate, Domingo Simaso Pereira, was demanding a recount. The party statement goes on to say that the hostile environment associated with the climate of terror forced Cipriano Kasama, the Speaker of Parliament, who, due to the vacancy in the presidency, took over the post of head of state. Cipriano Kasama, however, resigned yesterday after serving just one full day as interim president, saying his life and the stability of the country were in danger. In a statement to the press, third PAIGC vice president Khalifa Sidi, speaking on behalf of the parties that support the government in parliament, has called for swift intervention by the international community to prevent the situation from deteriorating further. In Malawi, Parliament has passed a bill which allows cultivation of cannabis for industrial and medicinal purposes. Backers of the bill say cannabis will boost the economy, which is largely dependent on tobacco. Anti-drug campaigners and religious conservatives say the move will encourage recreational use of marijuana. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Those of that opinion say aye. Those of the counter opinion say no. The ayes have it.
Former lawmaker Boniface Kadzamira first brought the cannabis bill to parliament in 2014 amid opposition from fellow parliamentarians. Now Kadzamira says he feels vindicated.
I'm very happy that finally the bill has passed, because when I was starting that issue, people thought I was crazy. They called me names. The National Assembly, in fact, the first day laughed at me, they booed at me. But I was determined because I had the facts on my fingertips.
Kadzamira says the facts include research showing that hemp, an anti-drug product of cannabis, can be used to produce soap, lighting oil, medicine, and other useful products. Malawi is one of the five Southern African countries, along with Zimbabwe, Zambia, Lesotho, and South Africa, that have legalized industrial hemp. South Africa went a step further in 2018 by decriminalizing recreational use of cannabis. Ben Kalua is an economics professor at Chancellor College of the University of Malawi. He is among in his field who say legalization will help the country diversify its agriculture-based economy.
It's economically viable because it has a long value chain. There are so many byproducts of industrial hemp, so many, including fiber for construction. There are all kinds of products that can be derived from that plant compared to tobacco.
Malawi has long relied on tobacco, which accounts for about 13% of its gross domestic product and 60% of its foreign exchange earnings. Over the years, however, tobacco prices per kilogram have fallen, largely because of anti-tobacco campaigns and fewer people smoking. Tobacco farmers like Hartley Changamala say they feel they now have an alternative. He says some of us are growing tobacco because we don't have an alternative crop to bring us income. But those who knew that tobacco farming has now become useless have stopped. So with legalization of the industrial cannabis, I feel I can benefit a lot as a farmer. Anti-drug campaigners and religious conservatives continue to argue that legalizing cannabis will encourage recreational use of marijuana. Nelson Zakeyu is executive director for the NGO Drug Fight Malawi.
Why I'm saying this is that there's a very, very minimal difference in appearance between the two, Indian hemp and this industrial hemp. So that's where the danger is, because many will be actually disgusting the Indian hemp as if they are actually using the industrial hemp. So we'll end up having abnormal citizens in the country.
Researchers say industrial hemp has a very low amount of the substance in marijuana, which makes people high. Malawian President Peter Mutharika has until March 19th to sign the cannabis bill into law. the president has not indicated what he will do. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
Kenya has stepped up security on the road that connects northeast Lamu County to the rest of Kenya after Al-Shabaab terrorists killed three people on a public bus in January. The attack is the second on public transportation near the border with Somalia in as many months. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Lamu County, Kenya.
Raymond Juma has been a driver on the road between Lamu and the city of Mombasa for years. On January 3rd, the insecurity of Kenya's northeast caught up with him and 47 passengers. I saw some armed men waving at me to stop, he says, and they shot three times in the air. I knew they were not policemen. I decided to speed off. Then they fired at the back and front tires of the bus, and one bullet hit the window, Juma says. I drove up to 100 meters, then the bus stalled. I ordered the passengers to get off, and everybody ran for safety. Juma's bus was not the only one on the road that day. While he escaped, Al-Shabaab gunmen ambushed other buses, killing three people. Since then, Kenyan authorities have beefed up the security along the road. Leah Wangari says this is the first time she's travelling in more than a year. Our government has provided us with enough security to escort us on the road, she says. Travelling on this road was not easy. To think about travelling on this road, it scares you. You don't know what will happen on the way. Penina Yeri says the journey takes more hours and can be tiring at times. Police escort is making us take a long time on the road, she says. At every station we are stopped, inspected. People are asked to produce IDs, some don't have them. Yeri says it takes long before you get to your destination. Lamu County Commissioner Irungu Masharia says the roads are safe.
Nobody is allowed to move without a security escort because we don't want incidences where people are asked to alight, then they are killed indiscriminately. So at least that security is provided, and we can task, we can reassure those who use our roads that they are secured.
But Al-Shabaab has no qualms about attacking security forces in addition to the road traffic they are protecting. In December, at the Somalia border, gunmen attacked a bus, killing 11 people, 8 of them police officers. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Lamu County, Kenya.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
The Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondence reports around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.